each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. This is another Wednesday, which means I'm Father Tom Coyce, as I'm happy to be with you here. We have, Nick, very good. You have both the reward room. Do you have the punishment room ready,
brain,
too?
It's very rich. He's protesting.
Now that
you're going to be more professional, that's what you're going to do.
Now, that's just a little premonition, you see. Our goal is to open the reward room as much as possible and avoid the punishment room as much as possible. And I think pretty much, yeah. And that would be what makes a successful hour to be with you with. And promise once again to wrinkle your brain as I explore the many fascinating things that I think about and read about and share them with you, hoping that we can carve a wonderful pathway to heaven and a better society that we live in as we contemplate the difficulties and problems, especially the moral problems of the day and the political problems of the day. I'm not going to get to this. I'm going to put this off. Yeah, here's.
I don't know.
There's something that we might say we don't know the answer, and sometimes we really don't. But God knows. God knows the answers, and God has a way for us. So we got to believe that the darkness or the ambiguity that seems to float around us is not from God. It's we who cloud God's plan. The reason I say that, I'm gonna make me come back to this. I don't want to start with this, but just to pique any listener's interest, I do have to explain how I included a little message about the wall in my last Sunday's homily, and I'm going to stand by it or explain it a little bit better, but this will dovetail from the topic of the day, the topic du jour. And if you get my flock notes, you received a little message that said Protestantism can't save America. Now, that's pretty. It's a pretty provocative thought right there, because there's many Christians who would say Catholicism can't save America, secularism can't save America. It is only Protestant, since it is Protestantism that built America. If we just get back to our founding principles, we will save America. And to some extent, I agree, but we got to dive into this because I'm reading Dr. Timothy Gordon's book, A Catholic Republic, and I got to share with you a bit more about that today. It's a fascinating read. You know, it's one of those, oh boy, here's one of those reads that's going to really stick with you and even change your life of sorts, or convince you even more of some thoughts. There's a number of themes, and it's hard to get to all of them. So let me start with them. Let me start with what he starts with. There's a beautiful in the introduction, or before the introduction, he has a quote from The Lord of the Rings, and it really illustrates something very theological, but of course, as the way only J.R. Tolkien can do it, it's not overtly political, it's not overtly religious or theological. It's a story, and you are drawn into it. But what his story, his fantastic narrative, fantastic in the sense that it's not realistic in the sense of what we usually mean by realism, because there are no such creatures called hobbits and dragons and curses and Mordor and Gondor and all these other characters are fictional characters, of course. But he's trying to teach us a lesson. And at the beginning of Timothy Gordon's book, he quotes Pippin, who is asking Gandalf a question. He's saying about the hobbits, why are they still guarding the tree of the king? The hobbits, a peaceful and joyful, family-oriented group of folks, have a very pastoral setting that they live in, and one of their issues, one of the things they do is they guard the tree of the king. And here's the answer that Gandalf gives them. They guard it because they have hope. A faint and fading hope that one day it will flower, a king will come, and the city will be as it once was before it fell into decay. Now, if you know the story of Adam and Eve, you're like, wait a minute, where does he get this idea that a kingdom fell? Or then, especially that there's a tree associated with this fallen kingdom. But because so many people don't even know the basic stories in the Bible today, it's certainly worth a read. Or if somebody goes to see the movie, they might their curiosity might be piqued, and they will wonder, this is a very interesting story. But almost all interesting stories mimic or try to paraphrase or try to explain a little deeper and in different ways those messages, those truths found in the Holy Bible. So, but here the Gandalf continues. He says, "The holy wisdom born out of the West was forsaken." Got to stop right there again. Why didn't he say the East? The old wisdom born out of the West was forsaken. You can easily see that the West is the Christian Europe, the West meaning European culture, the Western world, as we sometimes would call it, as opposed to Eastern philosophy and the Buddhist and Hindu traditions of the East. So he says, "Kings made tombs more splendid than the houses of the living." He's going to explain part of the reason why the old order died. "Kings made tombs more splendid than the houses of the living." The kings were more interested in their legacy and how people will remember them than they were interested in the people that they were supposed to be governing. "And they counted the old names of their ancestors dearer than the names of their sons." That's another reference. "I come from the line of so-and-so. I'm from the tribe. Don't you know who my father was? Don't you know who my grandfather was?" And that admonition of those who have gone before us can overshadow a desire to even be admired by your own children. And by being good and helping them discover the good and the beautiful and the true, that is how sons will admire their fathers and mothers. He goes on, childless lords sat in aged halls, musing on heraldry, or in high, cold towers, asking questions of the stars. And so the people of Gondor fell into ruin. The line of kings failed. The white tree withered. The rule of Gondor was given over to lesser men. That's a quote from The Lord of the Rings, and it's a apt introduction to a book that's going to talk about American history, because what Timothy Gordon is going to try to help us see is that there was a kind of glow and goodness before America fell. First of all, got to explain or prove to anyone that America has fallen.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, now, lest we be accused, meaning someone like me who's a religious person trying to explain philosophy and theology in the world today, lest we be accused of just being pessimistic. People innately repel from a pessimistic person. They innately or naturally flock to a positivistic kind of person. Is America decaying, or is it being elevated in one way or another? And of course, we should be open to an answer that would say it's decaying in some ways and being elevated in other ways. But let's not, let's decipher what is a sign of the decay, or what is really the decay, and what are signs of the elevation, and what is real elevation, as it were. I happen to see the Oprah Winfrey acceptance speech at the Golden Globe Awards just a couple weeks, last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't know, it was in January now, just a little bit ago. And it was like very, I have to say, there's something that draws me in, because she's trying to be the positive prophet, in the sense that the old America was bad. We are on the crest of a new and better America, and that's certainly a hopeful place to start, of course. And I like to join in on that mantra. However, it was all about the very terrible way that blacks, and especially black women, were treated in the past. And she called upon all today to disavow and put behind us forever the kind of abuse and taking advantage of on the part of men over women, and white over black, though she turned it more into women versus men. And it was, now we are standing at a new dawn, and we will never go back. And of course, that's a lot of positive prophesying, or positive cheerleading, as it were. And to complain or to point out how men would mistreat women, abuse them, and take advantage of them, as it were. That's a noble, and it's a sermon that any number one of priests or bishops in the Catholic Church, or many Protestant churches, of course, too, can preach. However, as a preacher or as a prophetess, if that's what we'll call her, she I believe by her almost 100% laying guilt upon a type of person, namely a male type of person, if that category of persons are the essence of the badness of the past, then she's planting the seeds with her admonition to not go back to the past, but by her describing women and only women as victims, and men and only men as tyrants or villains, she's making a class of human beings a new black person.
Wow.
It's a different kind of racism.
You just wrinkle my brain, man.
It does wrinkle my brain, too. Obviously, when we use the word racism today, we think of the class of people. We divide the human race into many different groups of people, and when we say racism today, we could say the black people put down by white people. And, of course, that is realistic. A realistic manifestation of a bad attitude about humanity. But humanity can also be divided between men and women. And what I wanted to say, sort of, if I were able to give her a quick little response, I'd say I'm glad you gave the talk you gave, but you didn't go nearly far enough. And you have to warn, you have to tell people not to take what you're saying in the wrong way. The empowerment of women today, if she would have added, which of course these words would never come from an Oprah Winfrey or someone of her stature in a speech today, if she were to add, and we will recover our female power, and we will enter a new age of non-discrimination based on sex by insisting that no laws will be respected that allow the killing of unborn girls. You said, "Well, wait a minute. How could you limit it to unborn girls? Shouldn't you say unborn boys and girls?" Oh yeah, I guess you should, shouldn't you? Because if you did say, women will be empowered by reversing Roe versus Wade, but only halfway, we will insist that the law will protect all unborn girls. Though any mother could abort a unborn boy if she wants to, and then what if she were to say, and the use of artificial contraception, the indiscriminate sleeping around, I guess, is what you could sort of call it. If Oprah would have included those kinds of things in her speech, I would have stood and applauded with everybody else. But minus that, it seems to me that she's planting these seeds of a new kind of ignorance and a new kind of oppression. And that's often what happens when you look at through history. The oppressed become the oppressors. We have to be very cautious. We have to be very careful of that, my friends. The oppressed, once liberated, have to be very careful at not becoming the oppressors. Like one of my favorite heroes of American history, Abraham Lincoln, was very, very aware of that as he won the Civil War and realized right away that he didn't want the North to now enslave the South, as it were. So anyways, okay, we got to take a quick break here now. I got to come back and go a little deeper into Timothy Gordon's Catholic Republic. I think you'll find it very, very interesting, as I have. Well, I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to WNDZ, Winds of Change, which is listener-supported. God bless you for what you can do to help.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change. On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
This is Bold Talk with Father Thomas Loyola.
We live in strange times, full of contradictions, many of which we create and then force upon ourselves. An example.
To hear the rest of this and other Bold Talks with Father Thomas Loya, visit taberlife.org and go to the main menu and click subscribe.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Father Tom Coyce here. I flock noted out, which is a different way of saying tweeted. I don't tweet, but I flock note. And by the way, as I often like to share with my listeners, please send me an email so that I can put you on the list. And if you like the Winds of Change, especially the Wednesday brain wrinkling hour with yours truly, I'll send you a little text or email that gives you a little intro to the day. Yeah, that's how it begins. And the hour begins in the depths of my mind, but I'd like to say my prayer too. I pray about this show.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Yeah. We need more hours. That's for sure. But anyways, I pray about what to bring before you. And as I was saying before the break, I was contrasting an attitude that I will admit I have that sees American culture in a decline with the attitude of someone like Oprah Winfrey, who sees it in a rise, is more positive. And so since I'm taking a negative perspective and she's taking a positive perspective, she will automatically be more popular than I or anybody who would I dare say that there is a problem. And so she's pointing out one of the problems that certainly has been a black eye in the course of our American history, 200 years or so, namely the way blacks had been first enslaved.
Show's over. Nothing to see here. God, a horrible plane crash. Hey, everybody, get a load of this flaming wreckage. Come on, run around. Don't be shy. Run around.
Well, gather around your radio. I thought you were telling me the show's over, Nick. You know, that I didn't want to shut the show down just because. But that's... Anyways, that's our wonderful Officer Wiggins from The Simpsons, of course. Okay, anyways, to get back to reality here. The contrast between a negative and a positive view. I want you to consider... please don't make that your only assessment about people who you're going to listen to, who you're going to read. It's a very dangerous thing to equate positivism with the better and negativism with the worse. Why do I say that? Is because I believe in something called good and evil, right and wrong. If there is good and evil, then it is good to be negative about the evil. It's good to be positive about the good. And so, unfortunately, today, the a positive outlook often will be hooked up with or married to a moral relativism that, in a certain sense, actually denies the reality of an objective good and an objective evil, that moral relativism is the reason to have hope in the future, is the seed, is the problem by which one should say that form of positive attitude is naive and childish. Can and should Oprah Winfrey be glad that the United States has changed so beautifully about relations between blacks and whites? I think yes. Can she be happy about the way men have held back, at least to some extent, the a more dominating or disrespectful attitude about women in general? I think yes. However, things that are alive and controverted today have to be examined just as much as those of the past. So, okay, now we're going to get to... let's see, how should I... Yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, all right. I got to wrinkle it. I got to clearly wrinkle it, because I know the topics I talk about and try to bring to you are, shall we say, deep and not always easy to articulate and explain. So let me try my best. First of all, the thought that Protestantism can't save America involves, obviously, the assumption that America needs saving. it also is challenging those who would say Protestantism built America, and therefore getting back to its founding principles and thoughts will help save America. And there I want to say yes and no. Why yes and no? Yes, because it was the founding principles of America were innately wedded to kind of a Christian world outlook. Christian in the sense that it came from the Bible, Christian in the sense that it came from European Christianity, which was, by and large, very much dominated by Catholicism. Catholicism helped found America in ways that the American founders didn't want to accept or recognize. Here's how it goes. What is it in Protestantism that is prohibiting a recovery of American principles and values. Timothy Gordon, and I agree with him quite wholeheartedly, tries to spell out that, of course, the doctrine of sola scriptura is fundamental to Protestantism. And what does that mean? It means that all truth has to be found in the Bible. Don't waste your time. Don't try to convince me about this or that truth if you can't point it out to me in the Bible. Now, of course, the United States came up with a constitution. And, of course, the Declaration of Independence broke us off from the kingdom of Britain, the kingdom of England. And where in the Constitution or Declaration of Independence, Timothy Gordon wants to point out, do we find some Christian ideas? And of course, Thomas Jefferson's in the Declaration of Independence, his strong words of "we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Now, we all can and we should revere that concept, a founding concept of our country. And yet, Timothy Gordon would like to point out, and if you don't really know, that those words are not in the Bible, right? All men are created equal, are endowed by their Creator. Okay, those are beautiful words that Thomas Jefferson wrote, obviously, and tremendously grateful. But those aren't in the Bible. You can't find those. That's not chapter and verse quotable. You know, you can't quote that chapter and verse. And that's where he got it. So what does that mean? That means a fundamental truth that is at the heart and center of the founding of the United States of America is extra scriptura, not solo scriptura. Solo scriptura. Do you get what I'm saying? And so founding. Yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That very founding almost sort of breaks the... It's kind of like, okay, Martin Luther, thank you for that great insight about sola scriptura, but we're not going to use that to found our country. We're going to dig a little deeper. We're going to find some truths that are extra scriptura, that are, what else can we say? That are found in nature. It's not written by any human being. It's found in the very nature of man to yearn for freedom, to want to pursue happiness and all the rest. And that, my friends, is where the little dirty secret called Catholic natural law sneaks its head into the founding principles of our nation. Where does those come from? I got to tell you that, of course, right after this break. We'll go a little farther with Timothy Gordon. And please stay tuned, because this is quite important for our attitudes in our world today. God bless you for listening. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through 8th grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coy's with you once again, trying to explain a very radical, but I think in some ways very easy to understand, historical book that a young Catholic philosopher by the name of Timothy Gordon has put out called A Catholic Republic, and he's trying to help the United States of America pull out of its downward descent. And you could only believe, you only start to believe that it's going in a downward descent if you don't believe in moral relativism. That's where the those who see that have a very, very different starting point than those who start with a belief in moral relativism and see that our jettisoning of moral principles is our mark of progress, or I would say it's the mark of decay. Many are thinking and saying that it's the mark of progress. Now, that's the choice, my friends. We got to see, take reality for what it is, and not live in a make-believe world, as it were. And the more signs of decay, like violence and dysfunctional family and poverty, and corruption in leaders and all the rest, those are pretty clear signs of decay. Timothy Gordon and I, we're trying, and many who cherish a Catholic worldview are trying to point out that it is in this loss of the sense of natural law that it's at the heart of our growing decay. The loss of the sense of natural law. And as I said just before the break, as we were analyzing the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, especially the words of Thomas Jefferson, that so powerfully, and we are so proud of Thomas Jefferson's articulation of natural rights, right? Natural rights. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator, with the right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Since they are not found in the Bible, they fall outside of the Protestant genius. I'm saying that with tongue in cheek because the Protestant genius is to tell the world that the only true knowledge that comes to us from God comes from the Bible. And obviously Thomas Jefferson included God in there. So he didn't get it from the Bible. Where did he get it from? He got it from the tradition that's known as Catholic natural law, especially spelled out and explained by Thomas Aquinas, who borrowed greatly from the old Greek philosopher Aristotle. This connection between Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas is so very important that Thomas Aquinas needed to write and teach what he taught at the time as the Catholic Europe was in a difficult time, of course. But I want to stop myself. I just used a phrase that I almost promised myself not to use. I said Catholic Europe. A lot of people say, well, from, let us say, Constantine to Martin Luther, Europe was dominated by Catholicism. I always want to say, excuse me, to say that Europe from 400 to 1500 was dominated by Catholicism is a little bit like saying, what's a good analogy? The NFL, what are we in the football? We just our beloved Bears just lost one of their first playoff chances. We could say that the central division of the NFL was dominated by the Bears. Well, they were in it, but they didn't dominate it. What I mean by that is that obviously the Christians that were in Europe during those, let's say, 1,000 years, were Catholic. But to say that they dominated is to completely ignore the ones they fought. And who did they fight? Well, they fought many secularists. They fought many would-be. They fought many bad Catholics. And the popes and the bishops fought many of the kings and the princes. I'd say by and large, the popes and the bishops were the good guys standing up for Christianity, although there are times when it seems like the popes and the bishops traded sides, and the kings and the princes were the ones standing up for Christianity. I can't help but cite, I think I've talked about this before, the incredible example of Emperor Charles V. Emperor Charles V was doing more to try to save Catholicism or Christianity from the Muslims, the Muslim invasion, the Islamic invasion of Europe. He wanted to stop them, while the Pope and many of the new, he lived in the time of Martin Luther and the Reformation, and many of the new Christian, the new Protestant Christians, didn't care at all. So Charles V was practically begging and demanding that the Pope call a council to get these sticky theological issues that were a part of the fight. Let's get some clarity here. And they weren't moving. It took so many years, almost 50 years, for the Council of Trent to be called. Meanwhile, towns were burned and people were killed and all the rest in these fights. So the Sola Scriptura is one of the reasons why it's going to be naive to say that Protestantism in its fundamental principles will help save America, because the crisis is primarily a moral crisis, is a crisis of our ability to harmonize our civil law with the natural law, believing that the natural law is written by the hand of God, as it were, and of course with the Decalogue, but the fact that so many of our civil laws have even created laws directly against the Decalogue, i.e. the natural law, shows that the Bible alone is not doing it, as it were. And then the other aspect of Protestantism, which Timothy Gordon wisely points out that we should be aware of, is that Protestantism in its original form really denied freedom in the human person. You're not really free to do good or bad. And you can say, well, wait a minute, how did we get that? We get that from the insistence on the original Protestant, quote-unquote, reformers, their insistence that you cannot do any good work to save yourself. It's the other fundamental principle called saved by faith alone. So all grace is absolutely gratuitous. And therefore, if we say that I and I alone with my human nature can do something good without God's supernatural grace, then God's not in charge, and I'm in charge. Or if you give man the ability, the ability of freedom, if you accept and recognize that man is created with a free will, then you're going to destroy Luther's concept of the gratuitousness of faith. God has to be completely in charge, and you're doing something good really isn't you being free. You're just, it's like a reaction, an instinct, like when the doctor hits your knee with the little hammer and your knee bounces up, that God is hitting your knee with his grace and your knee bounces up, which is called a good action.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Indeed, indeed. Oh my goodness. And you're just wrinkling my brain, Nick, because we need to take another break. I promised that I would touch on this sticky issue of the wall. And I believe some of these important principles that I'm trying to articulate here have a direct link to this matter. So we'll take another break. Don't go away, my friends. I'm Father Tom Kois. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through 8th grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Well, with a little bit of time left in this precious Winds of Change brain wrinkling hour, I promised that I want to relate the attitude that I've come with very reluctantly. And that is a support for this, what I call, this is why I kind of got in trouble a bit in my sermon on Sunday. I'm going to call it this damn wall. Excuse my French. And I'm calling it this damn wall and supporting this damn wall Because the what Timothy Gordon is trying to highlight and trying to point out is that without a recovery of the natural law that comes to us from Catholicism, doesn't come to us from Protestantism, nor secularism, nor the world of science, the beauty of law and order, in the sense of God's law and order, comes from Catholicism, which rightly and beautifully gives credit to its Judeo foundation, its beginnings. So the Judeo-Catholic tradition, you know, one of my great radio heroes, Dennis Prager, often uses the phrase Judeo-Christian heritage, and he's got something there, because I know what he's talking about. He talks about Judeo-Christian values. He wisely, I think, says we can and we should be able to live with diverse theological principles, but we can't continue a good society if we live with diverse and different and especially contradictory moral principles. So it's that need for universal moral principles that a great big society like the United States of America absolutely needs. You've heard me share with you on this very radio station the the little clip from James Gardner's movie, the Sheriff, Support Your Local Sheriff, where he puts a guy in jail, but the jail has no fence and has no bars on it. But it's James Gardner, the hard-shooting, brave, fearless sheriff, that is able to keep the criminal in the jail, even though it has no bars, primarily because his moral authority is stronger. Oh, my goodness. You found it there.
We don't have any bars.
This is what...
That's what I said.
Now, we don't have a wall yet.
Just as if the bars were there.
We're going to operate.
Stay on that side of the line and
talking to people.
What? While you're in this jail.
Now, while you're in Mexico,
you stay on that side of the line
and I'll stay on the... And if you don't cross that...
You expect me to sit here?
You expect us Mexicans to stay in Mexico and without any wall? The reason I'm saying that is because for 200 years, that's exactly what happened. Well, maybe 180 or so, because the illegal crossing of the border has been happening for a good number of years, that moral law was written in the hearts of the Mexican and other people that come through the southern borders. It was written in their hearts. The moral law was internal. Now, the tremendous loss of objective morality, evidenced by the right, the Thomas Jefferson's natural right to life, has been turned upside down by the right to an abortion. Thomas Jefferson says this is a fundamental human right, the right to life. Well, okay, somehow in the course of 200 years, we've changed the Jeffersonian, which I'm going to say is an Aquinas Catholic discovery or principle, we've turned it into the right to an abortion. That indicates that this... unwritten moral law within the heart is gone. When the unwritten moral law in the heart is gone, then external things are needed to prohibit communities from doing wrong, because people will then do, they'll take, and then to follow up on Thomas Jefferson and other principles that were endowed with liberty, liberty has been transformed into I'll do whatever I want, which is license. And that's not liberty. And the form of liberty enshrined in the Declaration of Independence is much more similar to what the Catholic moral law says is license, because it just sort of accepted the fact, well, nobody's going to argue about this or that. We're a civilized people. Well, we're civilized now, but give us a few decades and we'll be very uncivilized. So the wall, and the reason I add the adjective dam wall to the situation of the wall is I'd rather not have to have it built. I think almost everybody wishes that we didn't have to, but some are more realistic when they say, if it's not there, how will we expect the natural moral law, which respects the sovereignty of borders and nations, to be lived? It's naive. It reminds me exactly of God giving permission to the Israelites to have a king. Remember when God set up the judges? The judges were supposed to teach the Ten Commandments. They were supposed to abide by the natural moral law. They were supposed to behave well. When they didn't behave well, they had to go to the judges, and the judges would decide who's right and who's wrong, as it were. Then corrupt judges came in, and the judges weren't exercising their authority. They weren't teaching God's natural moral law, corruption and poverty and dysfunctionality reigned. And so then the Israelites say, well, we need a king. We need a king. And remember that God didn't want Israel to have a king. He says, the judges are good enough. I'm your king. If I live in your heart, you'll do just fine. But the Israelites were like, well, you don't live in our hearts. And then God says, well, then have your damn king. And that's exactly how they get their first king. Samuel, the prophet, says, well, I'll go pick Saul. And therefore, God had that attitude about the king as I'm having right now about the wall. Wish we didn't have it if the moral law was written and evidenced. That's the problem. The evidence is building up more and more, so that liberty, you can't be trusted with liberty because your understanding of liberty is just license. I'll do whatever I want. And of course, that happens in the streets. We call it crime. It happens, white-collar crime and blue-collar crime and all the rest of the kind of crime. And that's just on the rise. So it's evidence that external limitations are needed because we've lost the natural law. We need Catholicism in order to find it and re-establish it. Hey, we'll carry on more in this. I'm Father Tom Corys. This is listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The